This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. And if you're betting college football bowl games, and that can be a dicey endeavor, we're the podcast for you. We're releasing breakdowns for every matchup with new episodes dropping almost every day. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Appreciate it. Let's talk about these drone sightings in the Northeast and try to separate fact from fiction and what's going on, because I think you got a couple of things going on. You got the drone sightings, you got social media. Some of it's getting lost with the holidays, so people have a just like a half an eye on it, and as a result, sometimes that can lead to some misconception and misperception. So with that all said, let's welcome in Will Austin, the Warren Community College president and the college's chief drone pilot. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. How are you today?
I am okay. Thank you for taking the time, because this really did kind of capture my attention, because I think it speaks to so many things, one of which is we don't know what we don't know. Another thing is we like to make up things when we don't know it. Let's talk about how this whole thing began for people that know of it but don't really know about it.
Yeah, ironically, about a month ago, there were a couple of lights in the sky that someone identified as a drone, and a local politician of mine sent it to me, and I said, could be a drone, it could be three drones, it could be a drone and two planes. I said that the picture's so, it's so poorly taken at night that I can't really tell. Mm-hmm. So I said, I'll send some students over in those areas. They're always looking for something interesting in the drone area. And we came back and found basically that there were some recreational hobby drones. And then the story kind of grew, ended up in USA Today, ended up on Fox News, a number of other places, MSNBC. Now it's everywhere, of course. And what we've done is so many people have come in here to have us look at the video, the pictures, and we've been able to identify the vast majority of them as airplanes. A lot of them were taken near the airport. Some of the video, actually, you could see the airplane landing at the airport, and I was taken aback by that because I was looking at something that's obviously not a drone to most people, but that person, to them, it was a drone.
But, Professor, I hate to tell you this, but the society we're living in now, rather than say, oh, I was mistaken, it was a drone, there is a percentage of the population that would morph that into, now they're finding a way to turn drones into aircraft.
Well, drones are aircraft. That's what
know what I meant. Turning it into a commercial plane is what I meant to say. I shouldn't have said that.
Sorry about
a professor
that.
Of all people.
I'm the laid back kind. So okay. I think what you're seeing is then as this kind of went and the media attention went, and people in Louisiana and New Orleans have drones as well. People started going out putting their drones up at first to see if they could find these mystery drones that people said were bus size, which really don't exist at this point unless the military's flying them around or on some test runs that everybody would know. So they're not just, you're not seeing these kinds of aircraft flying around without permission from the federal government. So that caused people to see actual drones and then think that the other ones must exist because they're not familiar with drones. And then now I think what we're seeing and the things that are coming into me now are more the teenagers have figured out that this is a lot of fun. So they're going out on the nice nights and helping out a lot for people to see drones for the first time. And I think there is that kind of thing as the constituents call the local politicians. They go out and there's some misidentification by them. And I always watch Louisiana and New Jersey very closely, because I think there is a race between us to see who can elect the most interesting politician to office. But I think we usually lead, but you guys come on strong once in a while.
That competition. It's pretty tight. Pretty tight. I don't know who's going to cover the spread on that one. I should mention that Warren Community College is in Washington Township, New Jersey. And have you seen any of these purported drones yourself, Professor, or is that in your area of New Jersey? Of course, New Jersey, a big state.
Yeah, we're right next to where they were originally spotted. So we're right next to the county where they were. So I've gone out at night. I can't even remember how many times. And I've gone out with people, and I've spotted small drones myself. Nothing over 10 pounds has been identified at this point by anyone that I'm aware of. I've seen them flying around. I've stood with people who identified planes in the sky, but to them they saw a drone. And I think that's what starts to happen at a certain point. New technology comes on board, and people start to see drones. I often say right now it's in New Jersey. It's kind of like, if you remember that old saying, to a hammer, all the world's a nail, because we try to hammer in screws. Right. Well, right now in New Jersey, any light in the sky is a drone. And that's what's happening, because people are expecting to see drones. They think there must be all these drones. They trust, you know, their neighbors that they saw drones. And the reality is the people who thought they saw drones will always think they saw drones. Any kind, we see this with new technology. We can go back to the nuclear age, 1947, there's the flying saucer craze. 57, there's the Sputnik. They were spying on us, you know, from satellites when the first satellite went up. And now you're seeing drones for the first time in mass. And people, you know, it's a robotic revolution, and people are going to be what people do when they don't understand something. So we need to better communicate. That's why we started our program here at the college, because we kind of saw this coming. Not quite to this level. I can't say I predicted that. But I expected people to be very anxious about these drones flying around them.
Is there anything such as an average-sized drone? Or take me through drones, because I bought my kid one. Go ahead.
2.3 pounds is what the vast majority of them are going to be. They're going to be the DJI Mavics. You might have some old Phantoms still flying. You might have a Skydio, which, again, is going to be about 2 pounds. The vast majority of these are 2 pound pieces of flying plastic with a camera and nothing at all to be afraid of. But I will admit, even though I'm in the drone, the sounds are a little annoying, and I know all the manufacturers are trying to make the noise go away. When there's a camera up there, people think it would be an invasion of privacy. I like to remind people that there might be one drone in the sky that sees you, but if you walk your dog around your neighborhood in New Jersey, you're probably on 40 Ring cameras. I'm not sure how much privacy we have anymore.
That's an excellent point, but it's airborne, so all of a sudden, look out, right?
well, you know, we've been that way towards anything space and aviation for a long time.
Let's talk about the prevalence of drones, or the evolution, maybe, if we will, because now that I'm going to open the audience, the Oakenhart Jeweler Talking text line here to the audience for people that have any questions about the drones in New Jersey, 504-260-1870. Why do you think a text comes in? Why does the professor think that it's only in that area of the United States? I think I have an answer, but you go ahead first, Professor.
Well, I think it's been other places. This has happened in Colorado a couple of years back. But when New Jersey especially this part of New Jersey, is a major suburb like Connecticut to New York City. Mm-hmm. And New York City is where the media capital of the United States is. So a lot of people in the media live in New Jersey. So they're hearing from their neighbors, too. So I think, you know, whenever anything happens in the New York City area, it takes on a kind of larger significance than other parts of our country, because it's real easy to drive out here from the studios in New York. It's a little harder to get to Colorado or New Orleans from here. So I think that's why you're seeing it blow up so much in this region. But I suspect there's all over the country there are drones, so probably about 20,000 on average in every state.
It would seem to me my answer was going to be the same reason there are so many red cars on the road once you get a red car, right?
Yeah, I bought a yellow car once and was shocked how many more there were.
Uh-huh. That's what I think. Let me take a break. I want to talk about drones when we come back, because I got my adult kid one, I think maybe 4 years ago for a present, and it was a small one, and I think the phone, you put your phone on it, that was the camera that was included. For people that are thinking about drones for Christmas gifts, we'll talk about regulations, what they should look for, what they shouldn't. what does or does not have to be registered? How do you get involved with flying a drone? How hard is it? Somebody texted in and said 5% of them can't be identified. I don't know how uncommon that is or what that means. The professor can address that when we come back. Somebody else texted in, apparently, something with the military. The Spray Hawk is a rotary wing unmanned aerial vehicle. It carries a 30-foot spray boom with a capacity for 110 gallons of chemical. And I guess, again, drones can be anything to drop a missile on somebody from something that I got my kid to put his iPhone or her iPhone on. 9:20 more, we come back. Traffic now, WWL. No traffic, just a break, WWL. An interesting conversation with an interesting guy, Will Austin, Warren Community College president and the college's chief drone pilot. It is in Warren Community College is in Washington Township, New Jersey, where they have had all of these drone sightings. If you're just joining us, if you have any questions about these drone sightings, 504-260-1870, that's the Oakenhart Jeweler talk and text line. And I'll pass them along. There is nothing nefarious going on here. Professor, if another country were to try to send drones in, or if another country were to try to send any kind of aircraft in, could the government detect it for those that believe that that's what's going on?
Yeah, they would already be detected. So if there was indeed something like an Iranian mothership, there are exercises of the Coast Guard currently going off the coast of New Jersey, so that would not be there. And in fact, if it was, it would already be at the bottom of the ocean. But I don't. There's no evidence that even such a thing exists. So, you know, our military. We've had people at the. Some of our faculty are military contractors over the years. A lot of them had to leave us to go handle things and assist people in other parts of the world that became hotspots. But one of them was back last week from Jordan, because we're doing a lot of things to build defenses over there in the Middle East. And he was mind boggled by it all, because what he was saying was, people in the United States don't know what it looks like when someone sends drones in that way, like I was just dealing with it over in Jordan. And this isn't an uncommon. A lot of the guys who worked for me before built the counter UAS systems in Kabul in Afghanistan. And it started really hard. What they used to have to do was satellite pictures of what the drone looked like on the outside. And then by just looking at those pictures, trying to figure out what antennas they had, they would rebuild the exact things our adversaries were building. And then they would fly them and build the defense mechanism. So we have the capability. If there were foreign drones in the sky, the U.S. Air Force would already have dealt with that. We have a lot of practice from our wars in Afghanistan and Iraq with drones of this nature. So we invented the Predator drone in a lot of ways. So at that same time, there are people in the military who every day this is what they work on. I met one group of young men one time. All they do is work on antennas and radio frequency. So that's all they do is master that. And it's kind of interesting to be around them because, you know, to me, that's a very dry subject, but these guys can talk about antennas for hours. So we have real experts in the military. But here is a good point that I think the politicians have made. Militarily, we're really, really advanced. Mm-hmm. But civilly, there are local police and law enforcement. We really do have to get them trained well to use counter UAS equipment. You can still do something with a 2-pound drone. You could crash it into a car. You could do anything. But I want to remind people, you could do something with a plane as well or a car. So any kind of machine can be turned into something nefarious. So the question is, we have means on the ground. We need means in the air to protect ourselves as this technology takes off, because it is going to be amazing what it does for us if we use it in good ways. We're going to find people who are missing. We'll be able to find people who've been murdered and buried, so their families. We have underwater drones. We're finding people around the country that have been lost for generations. We can deliver medical equipment. We can, you know, we do agriculture. You talked about that large spray drone, 100 pounds. We have 100 meters. We have one that's 50 liters, so half that size. So there are large drones flying in the national airspace. When we fly something that large, we have to file a flight plan with the FAA, And that person who flies a drone over 55 pounds has to not only have their Part 107, so that's the certificate for flying the small drones, but they also have to have the same certification that would be needed to fly an airplane up there. So there's a lot of regulation, but what there isn't is a lot of good communication about the robotic revolution, what's coming, and the regulations that the FAA already set up to make sure that the things we worry about are limited and unlikely to happen.
And as you say that, I'm certainly not encouraging this, and I hate to even mention it, but when you talk about crashing a two-pound drone into a car, people have gone to jail already for dropping bricks and bowling balls off of overpasses and hurting people, so it doesn't have to be high-tech at all. Let me get to a couple of questions, because I want the audience to text in, and I want to take advantage of your expertise. That being said, I want you to come back on and talk more about this, where we can spend another hour, because it fascinates me, the technology here. We could go for 8 hours with this, but we don't have the time today. What do you say of drones that go in and out of water that the Navy can't identify that are too fast? Does that exist, or is that something on the internet? Tell me about that.
Yeah, not really. So there have been attempts at this. So there are prototypes. I know Rutgers University is famous for kind of trying to build a drone that went underwater and came out in the air. The problem with the reason they don't really exist in the way that's described is water and electronics don't go well together. So you have to build the structure in such a way that it can go underwater without any of the electronic equipment being damaged. And it also has to fly in the airspace. So the engineering design on that is very difficult. The other thing that people forget when they describe such things, and why I'm pretty confident that that didn't happen, is radio frequencies propagate through space. They propagate through our atmosphere, and we use those for the GPS signals, the control. But you cannot propagate a radio signal through water. That's why, if you remember, you ever seen anything with a submarine, they use sonar because they can't use radio frequencies under there. So if you were to put your drone underwater, you no longer have control of it. And what can happen then is, how do you get it back out? Now, you could program it to go in and then come out, but here's kind of what the underwater drones happen. When you have large underwater drones, they sink them under the water. They have a pre-programmed mission underwater, and they pop back up, and then you get the radio frequency to find out where they were. There's an old joke in that area, because when these things first came out, they cost a couple million dollars when they were first being designed. And the thing was, the successful mission for an underwater drone is you got the drone back. And one of the best places that was actually done was down near you in the Biloxi, Mississippi area. University of Mississippi created some really fantastic underwater drones for after the BP oil spill to kind of have that done. So we know enough about underwater drones that people have stopped trying to design these things that can go in air, land, and underwater. We've built one here. It's probably the least threatening thing we have because it's always breaking down because, again, you're taking electronics underwater and there's always leakage and everything else.
So somebody else texted in, and, Professor, just so you know, I did an hour one time on, and I had to fight Jordan Fiegel, our producer, to do it, but on fallacies of logic, just to kind of help people clear up how they think, right? And this is not your wheelhouse necessarily, but somebody texted in and said, we don't know what they are, but they're not nefarious, makes sense to me, which is kind of like proving a negative or starting with facts that are not in evidence. Are there drones? I mean, is there a big mystery here? Are people manufacturing a mystery is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no problem. So, I'm a college president, which means I have 2 degrees in aviation, 2 degrees in sociology, a degree in leadership, and a degree in philosophy. So I'm happy to talk about logic.
So there you go. You're right there with me, right?
Yeah, a lot of this, I feel like when I'm talking to you, you're being very reasonable, which is awesome because you're educating your audience. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the people I'm talking to, I feel like I should speak to them like Mr. Spock on Star Trek and just say that's completely illogical. Because a lot of the things that are coming up and what people are describing are impossible aerodynamically. Mm-hmm. I mean, we just cannot do these things. The other thing is this began on November 19th. It's a month later. Why would anyone nefarious fly around for a month drawing attention to themselves. And why would the person put lights on their drone so other aircraft wouldn't hit it if they were bad actors with a bad intention? I can put up a drone without turning the lights on tonight. You won't see it at all. I have fixed-wing drones that I could paint black and throw into the night sky, take the lights off, and you wouldn't see it. The reason we put lights on that can be seen for 3 statute miles isn't so we can admire them from the ground. It's so the other aircraft in the sky can avoid them.
Two questions. First of all, when they send these drones out that send a missile strike and take out a terrorist leader here, there, the other way, how big are those drones? They got to support the missile, right, and carry the missile?
Yes, so they're big enough. So they look like planes. You can kind of Google a Predator drone or a Reaper drone, and they will hold. They were originally surveillance drones, and then, of course, someone thought, well, if we weaponize this, it would be a good thing. Mm-hmm. They are flying at such an altitude. They're meant to be covert. So you're not going to fly. Let's say we're using one of these drones over in Afghanistan. We didn't fly them at 400 feet with the lights on. Announcing we're coming so you could hear it. We were at a very high altitude, so it wasn't able to be seen, and it would hit its target from up there. So, it's kind of like when they say the military drone. Well, the last person to have legally flown a military drone over the state of New Jersey actually works for me now, and he was on the crew that did that. Military drones have been flying around for testing. We use the surveillance version of such drones down by the border for border patrol. So this stuff is in use. It's been in use for years. But I think what we've seen now is what I kind of anticipated would come. We've gotten to the point where there's over a million of them, the small recreational ones. People are doing the right thing. They're putting their lights on the drones. They're registering the drones. And it's kind of an irony because people are getting fearful over the people who are doing what they're supposed to be doing to protect the airspace and to make sure that they can fly safely and professionally in the sky. The other thing I would say is night operations are very difficult. So if you do get a drone, you want to remind everyone, fly it around in the day for a long time and get used to the controls, because it is extraordinarily difficult to fly at night. So if we have a class of 20 students here, and we fly during the day, the instructor will take out a lab assistant to help them with the students. When the night class for the same exact 20 students come, we take 5 instructors and 3 lab assistants out, because that is how much more difficult it is to master flying at night. So my biggest fear now isn't necessarily someone intentionally doing something wrong. It's the fact that they got a drone. There's a lot of things. The immediate attention to the night, and they're going to go out and fly it at night, and they've never done that before. There's an optical effect called the parallax effect in aviation, and this explains why planes. If you go outside tonight, you can convince your mind you see a drone by doing this. Most of the time, we walk outside and we glance up at the sky and see a plane, and then we walk maybe to our car, and then we glance again, and the plane has moved. If you stand perfectly still and you concentrate your eyes on a moving jet as hard as you can, the parallax effect will come into play, and it'll start to look like it's hovering. And that's just an optical illusion of our eyes. And people tell me, well, you know, you can see as well at night as day. We can't. And we know this from another logical conclusion. Our horror movies and our scary movies are always done at night. Rip Van Winkle was taken out at night because that's when we start to see shadows. If you've ever walked in a dark area, sometimes maybe you see something, you thought it was a person, and you realize it was just some trick your eyes played on you. The same thing is happening with this deep concentration on our night sky in New Jersey.
Professor, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed this conversation. Real quick, and we do have to go, we only have 30 seconds. I asked you about the big drones. What's the smallest drone with a camera that you can fly?
Oh, I have one that weighs less than 0.55 pounds. So
really?
About a half a pound. Yeah.
No kidding. You got to come back. Is there a site that people can go to find out about regulations when it comes to drones, if they're thinking about gifting one to somebody and to guide them?
Definitely Google FAA trust certificate. The word trust, you need to pass a little test to fly in the national airspace if you're just flying for fun. So you want to get that certificate. You also want to go to the FAA Drone Zone and remember to register your drone. There were huge fines before for not doing these things. I wouldn't even want to be the first person to get caught now.
There are so many more things to talk about. We'll talk to you again after the first of the year. And also these displays where they do it with the drones, where it makes it look like fireworks, is amazing. Professor Will Austin, Warren Community College President, college's chief drone pilot. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy holidays. Appreciate your time and your expertise, sir.
Merry Christmas. Thank you very much.
It's nice to talk to somebody reasonable. 942, 18 till 10, traffic now, WWL. Till 10, it's the holiday season, time for giving. Nothing will make you feel better about yourself, really, than doing something for somebody else. And I can think of no better cause than what we're doing. Well, I can think of a lot of good causes. One of them is what we're going to talk about here, being a CASA volunteer for Jefferson Parish. There are currently 40-plus children that need somebody to be a voice for them. And with that, we're joined by our friend Margaret Ether, advocate recruiter for CASA Jefferson. Good morning, Margaret. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. How are you?
Good morning. Happy holidays to you and all of your listeners. I'm great, and I pray everybody is great as well.
Yes, just ma'am. Right there with you. Go ahead. Just tell me about the program.
CASAs are court-appointed special advocates for children in foster care. We need volunteers really, really bad. As he said earlier, we have 40-plus children on the waiting list. You don't put children in your car. You don't bring them to your house. You don't take care of them. You're the eyes, ears, and voice for a child that's been taken from their parents due to abuse and neglect and are now in foster care. I know everybody's ready for the holidays, but I just wanted to lay something on your heart, mind, body, and soul for the new year, because somebody made a difference in your life. So step to the plate, make a difference in one of our children's life. These are our children, and we watch the news and we see everything, but make a difference so a child can learn that what happened at home wasn't their fault and that you are going to stand by them and be there to help them in their time of need and show them some direction. As I said, somebody made a difference in your life. So we need to look at our purpose in life. What are we going to do? Who are we going to help? How can we help? That's why I'm the advocate recruiter for CASA and wanting to see how many people are going to step up to the plate to be in our January class or in our March class to make a difference in our children's lives.
So if I decide to volunteer, Margaret, what am I going to be doing? What kind of commitment is it, et cetera?
Okay, you have to be 21 years or older. The commitment is a 5-chapter class. We do a complete background check. We have to make sure that all of the persons that want to help our children don't put them back into arm's way. The 5-chapter class starts in January. There's a special day to do court observation where you go to court and you sit down and you learn and watch what goes on in the proceedings. This is a different journey in your life. It helps you to understand the legal things that happen to children. Also, you're sworn in by the judge and you're assigned to an advocate coordinator. The myth is we throw you out there and you don't know what's going on. You're trained, you're assigned to somebody that coaches you, that goes with you on home visits, that help you to help our children. So we provide everything that's needed so you can be a good advocate and say, you know what, I did help somebody.
Is there any kind of I don't know, on the website or whatever, testimonies from people that have done this and shared their experience and what kind of difference it made both for them and their advocate or their advocate?
Yes.
Would that be the word?
Yes. If you go to the website, we just did our Christmas celebration with our children. There are advocates that have testified as to how they enjoyed and still do the work that help our children. There's a lot of resources there about CASA Jefferson. We do things a little bit differently. We have a toy room with toys that's been donated for our children. We make sure that all of what our children need and our advocate needs, we provide for that. As I said earlier, you don't use your money. We have resources that make a full difference in helping our children. We just need your time, which is 1 or 2 phone calls a week, 1 or maybe 2 home visits per month to make sure that all of their child's basic needs are being met. So you help out in a large capacity. It may seem like it's not enough time, but it's enough for a child to see that somebody does care.
And in terms of determining whether it's right for you or not, you can figure that out just by going through the process, right? And if it's not right for you, it's fair to everybody to let you know, let everybody know before you make the commitment. But once you make the commitment, you got to be in.
Well, you don't want to commit to something that you're not sure about. So you sit down with an interview with me and we talk before we sign the necessary paperwork, because there are some documents that have to be signed. As I said, we do a complete background check to make sure that everybody who says they want to do this, that they're really right. And we talk about what's expected. So it's not for everybody. I know that. I know it's not for everybody. But the persons that have a love for children and want to make a difference, it's for you. It doesn't interfere with your job. I'm always asked, well, how can I do this in my job? It's doable. I have people that still have full-time jobs. I have a guy that's a notary that's been doing this for almost 15 years. He's still doing it. People find, if you want to do this, there are ways to make it happen.
Margaret, I can't appreciate you enough and the work you do enough. And you know, you got a voice here whenever you need it, because I learned about CASA for the first time about 20 years ago, and it is extremely important. Margaret Ether, advocate recruiter for CASA Jefferson. There is a discernment process for both yourself and them to see if it fit. But if you're looking to make a difference in the new year, go to CASAJefferson.org, CASAJefferson.org. And see if it's right for you. We'll take a break, find out what Newell's got when we come back, rather, on WWL.